Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
City of Chronicles is a Bay of Chronicles production.
Now, before we start our chat, we want you to head over to cityofchronicles.com/Patreon now and subscribe to the Chronicles Tifosi membership with a free 7-day trial. Get priority access to every episode and voice note before the rest of the world. Plus, no ads and bonus Patreon-only exclusive episodes and video episodes. Also, be sure to join the new chat community in the Patreon app and chat with fellow subscribers.
Hello and welcome to the Serie A Chronicles podcast, charging into another Champions League week like an Italian football manager at full time of a game when they've got something to say to the opposing striker. It's Nicky Vandini here. I have Patrick Hendrick and Mina Rizzuki with me in the booth today. Before we get started, just want to give you all a reminder of our free 7-day Chronicles Tifosi Patreon membership trials. You can get access to all of our full episodes 100% ad-free, plus bonuses such as videos and behind-the-scenes content. Just this week, for those of you looking forward to the Champions League games, we've got Mina Rizzuki interviewing Phil Kitchmalidis, chatting about the Spanish perspective going into these massive last 16 clash Champions League ties. So do give that a try if you haven't already. Mina, Patrick, it has been quite a weekend of eventful Italian football drama, I suppose. It's hard to think about anything other than Roberto De Versa first, sacked by Lecce for a headbutt on Thomas Onry at the end of Lecce's game this weekend. Mina, I know you wanted to have a conversation about which Italian football managers you thought would be best equipped to handle life behind bars, because you think that's where De Versa clearly is headed for his post-game incident. We're being silly.
Don't believe anything she says.
Add we some
don't
context, think. Mina, quick.
We certainly don't think he's going to be in prison.
He's not. He's definitely not.
But it started because I had done a show with, well, we did the preview of the Champions League matches between the Italian clubs and the Spaniards with Phil Kitchmalidis, and we started talking about Carlo Ancelotti and the whole tax issue that's going on in Spain. By the way, everyone seems to have a tax issue in Spain. I feel like I don't know what happens over there. No one pays taxes. I'm not sure what it is. Yes, but either way, somehow Patrick had come up with the idea of how Ancelotti...
Somehow? I don't think I'm the only one. We'll put it to the listeners. It sounded very ambiguous to me.
Okay, well, in it. Okay,
Simon, could you insert the clip here now so we can... clip inserted.
I'm not a tax expert, but no. I think we'll probably see him avoid jail. I don't think he's going to jail.
Oh, his eyebrows. Although I feel like he'd have a terrific time over there. They'd all be such fans of his. So this is apparently, like, listen to this. And Patrick, what is it that you thought?
I think you said Carlo Ancelotti with his eyebrows would be very popular in prison, but you said it in quite a sort of mischievous, coquettish tone, which made me think of perhaps some sort of, yeah. I need to steer clear of what I'm exactly alluding to. But put it this way, it was ambiguous as to how, in what way Carlo Ancelotti would be popular with an all-male prison population.
I think that's probably territory to steer ourselves away from. I was just going to think, I sort of could see some of them masterminding the system, in the same way as Simone Inzaghi can manage a football team. Could he navigate the prison politics and make sure that he was in charge of the dynamics in the lunch hall? I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this one.
Davide Nicola would crawl through a mile of poo, wouldn't he? He'd come out clean on the other side, I think. Yeah. The escapologist.
Absolutely. Davide Nicola would be the one with the endurance to break out. I think that's a...
Do you think Jose Mourinho would blame the stewards for
Well, Jose Mourinho, of course, broke into a Champions League game, I think it was at Chelsea, when he'd been officially banned from the sideline and he snuck in via the laundry bin. So Jose probably would know a way out of prison.
Clean laundry, we hope.
Oh God!
Jose doesn't coach in Serie A anymore. Just quickly on this, actually, because Patrick, you were doing a bit of last-minute research. We were talking about managers who have done things like Daversa before. To say Daversa has been fired by Lecce, which is not a small gesture, by the way, because they are in a relegation fight and currently are outside the relegation places. But we were talking about times this had happened before. And you went to Alan Pardew, who got how many games banned when he did it in England?
7-game ban, I think I just read. Yeah. So, and it was almost 10 years ago to the day, which makes me wonder whether we'll be revisiting this in 2034 in March.
And when was Delio Rossi? Do you remember Delio Rossi?
Delio Rossi, who punched Adam Jajic. Yeah, that was an unsavoury incident. That's more relevant, I guess, because it was Italian football. That would have been Fiorentina, I guess, wouldn't it?
Is it bad that I enjoy these incidents? Yes, it's probably bad. Yeah.
Can I just, in terms of Daversa, I feel some sympathy with him in the sense that Lecce have got a run of 3 or 4 matches where they're up against their rivals, and they didn't beat Frosinone last weekend. They drew. And then they lost at home to Verona. They haven't won away all season, so they tend to collect all of their points at home, and then they're losing to a Verona side who've been completely gutted and dismantled in January. He's up against Marco Baroni, who kept Lecce in Serie A last year. I'm just not pleading his case or by any means saying we should condone this violence. What I am saying is I think you have to be in a sort of very frazzled state of mind to lose your head to that extent. And I think he realized that with that result, he was going to be sacked anyway. So he's seen that match as a sort of microcosm as to whether he will continue, because I was just looking at it now. At Lecce, they went win, draw, win, draw, win for their first 5 games. They're unbeaten from their first 5 games of the season. They took 11 points from 15. Since then, they've won 2 matches, and that's why they're sort of hurtling down the table. And I think he knew he was out of a job, and you just resort to desperate measures. And as I said, it's completely abhorrent, and we can't condone it, and in fact we should condemn it, as Lecce did with a very swift statement. But I do think that we've all done things, I'm sure, at one time or another in our professional careers that we've regretted. Of course, we all necessarily resort to violence when we're in front of television cameras being beamed around the world, but
I have thought about
it. I do feel
it,
a bit of sympathy for him, because you just wonder when he's next going to be back in a job. And also, he's not going to be entitled to any payoff, because I think it's justa causa. So it's going to be gross misconduct, presumably, because you can't do that.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
whilst I think it's easy to condemn him and we should condemn him, I don't think it's as black and white as being like, he's an absolute disgrace. He should get a lifetime ban from football. I try and feel a little bit of sympathy with him, albeit it's just a moment of absolute madness.
I do think I should probably, I don't know if apology is right, but I was very flippant with the way I came into this podcast. We're in perhaps a silly mood and we're joking about things, but obviously assaulting someone in the workplace is not okay. Without question, Lecce have acted decisively and responded to that in a way that's appropriate. I think you have to take a step back and say, yes, football is its own thing, but still in any other line of work, if you headbutted someone from a rival company, the sack is the right way for that to be dealt with. And that's appropriate. And I don't think anyone is contesting that. And I think the Delia Rossi comparison's interesting. Delia Rossi, of course, was managing Adam Ljajic at Fiorentina, and Ljajic was giving him some back chat, I guess, on the bench after being substituted, and Rossi turned around and thumped him, and same thing again. Fiorentina fired him for that. He was banned for 3 months on that occasion. So a heavier ban. The ban for Davetis, I believe, is 4 games. So it's not actually a long ban, but if obviously he hasn't got a club to manage anymore. So that's the more significant part of that story. I don't know if you wanted to add any more context on this, guys. Obviously, it's a story that's had a lot of international coverage. You talked about the context of the pressure and the situation down there at the bottom. It's an extraordinary relegation fight that we probably should dedicate some specific time to at some point in the coming weeks. But right now it's 4 points from Udinese in 13th down to Sassuolo in 19th, only 4 points separating them. So it's a really, really tight fight going on, and Lecce are right in the thick of it. I think we probably still don't know all the details of exactly what happened between Daversa and Henry specifically that led him to have that reaction.
No, I don't think we do know, but clearly something he's done has really riled up Daversa. Even then, you shouldn't really be going up and remonstrating with opposition players. I mean, it's been unsavoury enough, and it's been a bit of a bad couple of weeks for Serie A when we consider Ivan Juric saying to Vincenzo Italiano, "Ti taglio la gola," I'll slit your throat as well. Mm-hmm. And then Juric obviously got a two match touchline ban, and he then came out and said, "I'd like to thank Daniele Prade and Vincenzo Italiano because they sort of pleaded the case on my behalf and said they knew me and said that I didn't obviously mean that. I was just caught up in the emotions of everything." And Juric said, "Oh, it's quite generous. They only gave me a two-match ban." There's a little bit of contrition, but I mean, it's not ideal, to be honest, because, especially when you consider his nickname was Il Pirata, the pirate as well, Juric. So sort of throat slitting is a little bit too close to the bone, no pun intended. So I think it's not been good. We don't want these instances. Obviously, the stakes are high. Less so for Juric, I would say. I mean, Torino sort of also runs in the race for Europe. But, you know, there's people's jobs are on the line. There's huge sums of money involved in being in Serie A. But I don't think that should ever necessarily... You can't get carte blanche to behave however you want. I did see one... Rome-based journalist who was being a little bit cheeky by saying, "Oh, thank goodness Mourinho's been sacked. Ever since then, coaches have been behaving impeccably now that the bad apple has been removed from the crop." And so that was a little bit cheeky, as if to say, Juric first, now Daversa. And maybe, you know, there was a lot of focus on the fact that Mourinho was always having members of his backroom staff being sent off, and he was constantly arguing the toss with opposition players and match officials. So I think it's becoming a worrying trend for sure in the Italian game as a whole.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think it's always worth pointing out it's Italian football. Talk about headbutts. People are going to think about Zidane. People might think about Gennaro Gattuso as well, going up to Joe Jordan in that infamous game in 2011 and giving him a butt. Neither of those acceptable, clearly, but you have to hold your coaches and your managers to a higher standard than players on the pitch. That's part of being a leader in the group. We've had a bit of technical issue with Mina. I'm not actually sure if she's back with us yet. Well, we're still not sure if we've got Mina coming back, unfortunately. But for now, Patrick and I will press on joys of modern technology. Big game this week, without question, was Bologna against Inter. I think a lot of us had this circled on our calendars because Bologna have been in such good form. Obviously, six games in a row they had won. They hadn't lost a game at the Stadio Renato Dall'Ara, their home stadium, since August. If any team was going to be able to throw a twig in the spokes of Inter's bike right now, you thought it was going to be this Bologna team at home playing the way they're playing in a week when Inter are getting ready to play Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Inter made six changes to their starting 11 and somehow it still was just fine. They won. I mean, it wasn't a rout by any means, but to me, it felt fairly comfortable, Patrick.
Very comfortable, especially in the second half when they just sort of challenged Bologna to break them down. I mean, Bologna, I think, would have had more possession over the 90 minutes anyway, but in the second half, it felt very marked. And in the first half, I thought Bologna went a little bit overboard in their style of play. It felt like it was almost, maybe I'm doing a disservice to Thiago Motta, but it felt like they were almost going, playing Bologna to the extreme with this gratuitous building out from the back. When at times I felt like a player could actually turn and go up the pitch, then often they were playing these triangles down by the corner flag. And a couple of times Inter pressed them well and nearly scored. Victor Christiansen in particular dawdled in possession. Turan won it back. Barella was one-on-one. And Sony for a Skorupski, very good save that it kept it 0-0 at that stage. What I would say was I do wonder whether, and this is what I say, this is what I mean when I'm saying I wonder if I'm doing a disservice to Thiago Motta. I do wonder whether that was a sort of audition for him to bigger clubs, and as if to say, look at how innovative I am. Look at how original my football is. Look at how I'm taking the game to Inter. I'm not overawed by this. I felt Bologna could have shown a little more humility in saying, yes, this is the way we play. This is the way we set up. This is the game plan we've been working on for 18 months, ever since Thiago Motta's been in the job. However, this Inter team is special. It's a once-in-a-generational team, and therefore we need to show them greater respect, so we're going to adapt our game plan slightly. They didn't do that, and I felt that at times they were sort of playing into Inter's hands, and they didn't really create too many chances at all. There was just the second half. Aslani gave the ball away. Ziyech should have squared it. Went himself, and in the end, that was a mistake. So it was for not the first time we've said this season, it was a hugely comfortable Inter win with a clean sheet, and 1-0 almost flattered Bologna.
Head to SerieAChronicles.com/Patreon now and subscribe to the Chronicles Tifosi Patreon membership with a free 7-day trial. Get early access to every full-length episode and voice note before the rest of the world, plus all episodes are 100% ad-free. And you get bonus Patreon-only exclusive episodes, video episodes, and behind-the-scenes extras. Also, be sure to join the new chat community in the Patreon app and chat with fellow subscribers.
Yeah, it's odd because if you look at the stats for this game, you can see, oh, Bologna had 20 shots, so Inter's 5. But actually, at 0-0, Inter could have scored about 3 times. Remember, Alexis Sanchez had a shot at the near post. Nicolò Barella went clean through. That's all before the goal happens. And as you said, in the second half, they kind of said, all right, then, well, we've got our lead and show us you can break us down. And Bologna couldn't. I in my article for The Guardian this week, came to this post-game interview that I thought was fun. It was a callback by the post-game interviewer of Simone Inzaghi to a conversation he'd had with Marco Parolo, his former player at Lazio, where Parolo said, when we were at Lazio, you basically said it's a challenge. You said you'd buy us dinner if we can score a goal set up by one wing back and scored by the other wing back. And this was in December, and Parolo was saying, so what is it you're trying for with this Inter team? You're trying to get one of your 3 centre backs to set up the other centre back with the way that those centre backs are joining the attack so freely. And this was the game when that happened. Bastoni with his cross from the left, Bissek with really like a proper striker's diving header, I felt like, from Bissek. That wasn't like I'm a defender who's got a bit of a nosebleed coming up here. That was a real, like, when you look at the still photos, he's looking good while he's doing it. You know, he looks like he's meant to be there scoring that goal. And the thing is, as I wrote, what's extraordinary about this, is that it isn't extraordinary, Mina. Like we're used to seeing, we're used to seeing Inter score these goals. We're used to seeing Inter play these crosses. We're used to seeing Bastoni on the edge of the box putting those balls in. That's just how they play now. The defense is part of the attack, and players can swap positions really freely in this Inter team.
Yeah, absolutely. And considering the fact that everyone just partakes in the action, everyone has an opportunity to score a goal, everyone is involved. We're talking about 70 goals in 28 games. That's averaging 2.5 goals a game. I mean, this is such an attack-minded team that really understands its power. I mean, I'm fascinated by the power of psychology. I remember a lot of the times, Nikki, when we used to talk to Gab Marcotti on the show, he used to say, I don't ever believe in psychology. And yet you look at this team that performed and did so well last season, by the way, when you look at their performances last season in matches, whether it's against Barcelona, in the Champions League, in the early stages, Inter have been fascinating to watch. The difference was that last year they were conceding a ton of goals, especially at the start of the season. And unfortunately, started to really lag behind in the opportunity to challenge Napoli for the title. This season, we're seeing a team that really believes in itself. The football is even stronger, but it's not that it's stronger. It's just more disciplined right now. And I think that's what's so fascinating to watch about it. It's that this is how psychology matters. It's not like this team has now got like all these. I mean, Thuram is an added value, obviously. There are, you know, having him now up front is certainly making a difference for Lautaro Martinez as well as for himself. But it's just how the team respond to everything. It's kind of like, we're going to win this regardless, even if we don't need to win this, even if we don't need to be on top form, it's amazing to me. And I think this is why it's so important to discuss psychology in general. But I just wanted to ask something, Patrick, because you said, I'll be honest with you guys, I was watching the Formula One race when this game was happening, largely because I wanted to see an 18-year-old in a Ferrari car. But I wanted to say that when I read the team sheet, I noticed that Bologna had changed quite a lot of their midfielders. And when I was watching the game, you said that they didn't show humility, but isn't that sort of like setting up for Inter being a destructive battleship, and let's go with a more cautious approach to try to make sure that we don't concede?
Possibly, yeah. They went with Jens Odgaard, who'd had a year in the Inter Academy, and he signed in January. He scored a couple of goals off the bench, and he was very hard work. He was one of the best players in the first half, actually tracking back from a right wing position. But
not someone who gives you anything going forward, right? It's a little bit like having Darmian rather than Dumfries. It's sort of a cautious approach.
I don't think it's as black and white as that. I think it's a nod to the fact that he's probably more tactically disciplined and a bit more mobile than Orsolini, who's more of a match winner. I think the plan might have been to try and keep the game at 0-0 and then have some of those players come off the bench in the second half, including Orsolini and Fabian, who is the other one that they signed.
That's another
Inter.
One. Fabian, didn't start.
He didn't, but Thiago Motta tends, he's a little bit like Vincenzo Italiano in that respect, the Fiorentina coach, in that he keeps you guessing with his team selection. You know, Riccardo Calafiori has been having rave reviews all season long and been talked about as an Italy international, but in recent weeks he's preferred John Lucumi as the left centre-back. So I don't know how much to read into that. I think it certainly was... Perhaps, yeah, as you said, it was a way of saying we're going to show Inter more respect. We're going to be a little bit more cautious defensively. But I do feel that, again, some of it was just gratuitous building out from the back. And it's not to my taste particularly. But, you know, that's my own subjective
taste.
It's not to Mina's taste. I mean, this is Pep ball, right? This is...
Well, I think it's so interesting because, like, I remember that sometimes sort of, let's say what's happening with Ange Postecoglou, or in general, what people favor these days is, you know, a team that always shows its identity, right? Like, we hate Madrid or we hate Juventus because they don't play a specific brand of football that you can differentiate from all the other teams. But one thing that Thiago Motta does is say, I'm always going to do this, whether you like it or not, even if it's risky, even if it's the approach might cause us problems, this is the way that we play and I'm going to continue trying. And all that results in is Gazzetta falling over themselves with compliments about how he sticks to his guns. And, you know, it's the usual stupidness that we read sometimes about like how identity matters more than results. But isn't that...
We talk about Roma Brighton.
Oh, hang on.
But isn't this the whole thing, right? Isn't this like him sticking to his guns to teach these young players that they shouldn't continue to insist on a specific game plan, even if they make mistakes? Because surely if you continue repeating something over and over again, then you will start succeeding.
I mean, I kind of want to spin that around just because I think they're playing against a team that has one of the clearest identities of any of the top teams in Europe right now. I think Inter absolutely are succeeding because of the identity of their football. And I think it's a brand of football that's something genuinely different to what I see anyone else in Europe playing. What Motta's doing, I think, is I understand where you're coming from, because I do think that, like, that point that was made a lot. I always think back to that ridiculous game between Tottenham and Chelsea where people were saying, oh yes, but Ange stuck to his guns and that's a good thing. Whereas do we say that for Bologna? I mean, so it was an odd situation really, this game, because on the one hand, I've started off saying it from the Inter perspective, this looked like one of the tougher games left for them. And they breeze through it. You could turn that on its head and say, from Bologna's point of view, you're playing an Inter team that's won 12 games in a row. Nobody really expects you to beat them. So is it a free hit? The reason it isn't is because Bologna actually still have to fight for their top four spot, whereas Inter, realistically, if they'd lost this game, would have made no difference to them at all.
I mean, here's the thing. Bologna have Empoli, Salernitana, Frosinone and Monza next. So this isn't a game that they have to win when you consider the four matches that they need to play next. I mean, Empoli is probably a lot tougher than it used to be. Salernitana, Frosinone, you'd imagine these would be easy wins. And Monza, well, you know what my feelings are about that team. So it's
Roma away coming up in the middle of April. I'm looking forward to that one.
That's going to be interesting. But I did, if anything, in this match, from what I looked, you know, and from the highlights that I saw, the one thing that did disappoint me about this game in particularly is that I thought that they were too cautious. I would have liked the substitutes to have come on a little bit earlier. I would have liked them to have really gone for it, if that makes sense. But I also understand that this is a team that's chasing top four and they don't have the pleasure in doing that. But it's your opportunity. This is what I mean. It is a free hit. Like, in the sense that, you know, you are resting Lautaro Martinez, you are resting Di Marco, right? There is the opportunity to get at this Inter, who weren't necessarily desperate to get the points in this particular match because they have such a huge lead over second place. But that's the one thing that, you know, I think it's funny because Thiago Motta is being linked to the Juventus job and everyone hates, you know, like the current cautious approach that Juventus play under Allegri, and it's all like safety first. And I was like, well, this, I'm not sure that Thiago Motta is the one that's always playing courageous football is my thing.
This is the crux of this question that I think we have to get to, Mina. Thiago Motta replacing Allegri in the summer, would you say yes to it or no?
I mean, if it's up to me, I'd have Allegri for the rest of my life. But
Max can do no wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like Max to go now because I can't deal with having to deal with the stupid fans, to be honest with you, who like, oh, there's no regret, there's no, ugh, I can't deal with that anymore. So I want him to go just because I can't deal with it. It's like it's giving me mental health issues because of the stupid fans. Sorry, guys. Become a member at patreon.com/Serie A Chronicles for regular bonus episodes and content. Sports Social Podcast Network.